Robin Meredith has had a front row seat watching the reemergence of China in India. She lives in Hong Kong, where she's a foreign correspondent for Forbes magazine. She's just written a book called The Elephant and the Dragon, The Rise of India and China, and What It Means for All of Us. Meredith recently sat down with Steve Paulson to talk about this historic transformation.
If we go back a number of centuries, the Silk Road was the meeting point between East and West, the trading route where Asians, Arabs, and Europeans interacted with each other. Do you see what's happening in China and India as a new kind of Silk Road for the 21st century?
In a lot of ways, we're seeing the reopening of the Silk Road combined with the reopening of the Spice Route. I mean, we are seeing two giant countries that for a long time have taken a pass on global trade, and they are now embracing both globalization and capitalism at the same time. And it's really returning India and China to their past roles as our big trading partners.
And it's worth pointing out that back in the 14th century, China was a technological leader. I mean, this was the country that invented paper and gunpowder and the magnetic compass. But of course, in more recent...
Even wallpaper.
Of course, for centuries, the West has been the locus of new technology. But I'm wondering if you think that will change. Will we see the cutting edge of technology shifting back to China and as well as to India?
I don't think we will in China. What China's really good at right now is copying Western inventions and making goods cheaper than Americans and Europeans and Japanese can.
Now, can they make things cheaper just because their labor force works for lower prices?
Actually, labor is cheaper in other countries than it is in China. However, China has connected most powerfully to the West. Now, most consumer products, not to mention big ones like cars, are being put together in almost a pinball-like fashion. Many pieces of products that we buy every day are actually made in different countries and all assembled in China. China has built roads and ports and highways and airports that can allow it to connect very efficiently to the supply chains of U.S. and European and Japanese companies that then export the finished products from China.
What about India? Are we seeing something similar happening there?
Absolutely, although it tends to be more service industry work that's moving to India. And of course, if you're in America and you call an 800 number, you quite often reach someone in India. What's interesting, though, is it's not just call centers that are moving to India. If you're an American and you didn't do your own taxes but had them prepared for you by a big accounting firm, most likely your tax preparer was doing that when sitting in India. A lot of animation for Hollywood movies is now done in India. All kinds of jobs are moving there, very high-end jobs as well. High-end research and development jobs, investment banking jobs are being moved there, and I see it on my trips there all the time. You know, you'll be driving along some bumpy Indian road to a suburb of, say, Delhi or Bombay. You get to an area where there are brand new office buildings, you know, skyscrapers, a whole forest of them. When you go inside those skyscrapers, you look at the roster of companies represented and you'll find, oh, Microsoft is on the 8th floor and Intel is on the 9th floor and Nike is on the 7th floor, etc. It's quite a dramatic change.
And you're saying these are white-collar jobs, too. I mean, these are important jobs in terms of how companies like Nike and Microsoft are positioning themselves.
Absolutely. These are middle-class jobs that were located in America before. Let me give you a couple of examples. IBM, GE, Microsoft, each of them have hired tens of thousands of Indians in the last few years. Accenture alone went from 800 employees in India 5 years ago to 35,000 employees in India today, and that's more than the 31,000 employees that Accenture has in the United States. So the job shifts are enormous. I just also want to go back very far back in time for a moment, if we could. You know, in 1600, India and China combined accounted for more than half the globe's economic output.
I was astonished when I came across that figure in your book. And then you say that, according to some economists, those two countries remained the two largest economies in the world until the late 19th century.
Exactly. And then they both were shut off from the world and didn't want to trade. India, because of its reaction to colonialism, wanted to be very, very self-sufficient. So it pulled back from the global economy. China, of course, had communism. It virtually shut its borders and stopped trading with the world and stopped having anything to trade, of course. So now we're seeing a return, many people see, of India and China to their historical equilibrium in the global economy. There really is a return. It's funny, isn't it? We're still seeing the Silk Road and Spice Route countries that we traded with hundreds of years ago returning to prominence today. And some economists say that China's economy will grow larger than the United States' economy by 2030, and that India by 2030 will have the third largest economy.
Now, over the last couple of decades, we've heard a lot about China as a rising power, not just an economic power, but a political power as well. And many people see this as the great future rival to the United States. But where does India fit into that picture?
Well, India, since it hasn't historically been an enemy of the United States, is often ignored in this discussion, but it shouldn't be. The fact that India and China are getting richer is enabling both of them to modernize their militaries, and both of them now have concerns about protecting their exports and also protecting their imports of oil and other natural resources. The interesting thing to me is that both America and China are rather predictably trying to draw India closer to their realm as a bulwark against the other. India, being India, is playing its traditional role of the independent, individualistic country. It doesn't want to be viewed as an ally of America or in the pocket of China. It is, you know, rightfully viewing itself as an emerging superpower in its own right. But I think we're moving from an era of unrivaled American dominance in geopolitics to, decades from now, a world in which we'll have a tripolar world. We'll have three superpowers.
Forbes magazine correspondent Robin Meredith talked with Steve Paulson about her book, The Elephant and the Dragon,